It's time for Breaking Bread with Papa.
Hey!
Don't you know?
Hey! No.
It's our goal.
Hey! No.
It's time for Breaking Bread with Papa.
Hey!
Don't you know?
Hey! No.
It's also a show.
Hey! Everybody, welcome to another edition of Breaking Bread with Tom Papa. I'm Tom Papa. How are you? Here we go. Here we go. Dipping into November. Holy Toledo. How did that happen? I know. Time is a weird thing. And we always get caught up in the cliches of, can you believe it? I think it was really fast. I think it was really short. Whatever it is, it's an adjustment. And the only adjustment we need around here is it's food time. So whatever state of being you are in right now, whatever your love handles are, whatever your boobs are, whatever your puffy face is, this is kind of as good as it's going to get. And you may try and maintain, you may try and fight off some pounds, but this is it, kids. We're heading into baked goods weather, holiday weather, end of the year, all that shenanigans. Nothing to be feared. Totally to be celebrated. Totally. Great show for you guys today. We have Nimesh Patel coming on the program, a very funny comedian. He's really great. I was really excited to sit down with him. You know, there's a lot of, he's had a lot of early success in his career, and he kind of blew up on social media and has got some great specials, and he's just a very thoughtful, funny comedian. And there's a lot said online about him as a comic and Indian American comic, and he's got this new special out, Thank You China, that is very popular on YouTube. And you know what supersedes all of this? He's from New Jersey. He's a Jersey kid. And as soon as I heard that, we kind of locked in. He had done my radio show and I got to spend a little time with him. And I saw him at the Cellar and stuff like that, of course. But, you know, when you interview somebody, it's a whole different thing. But he's just a funny guy from New Jersey. And you're going to love him. It's a great conversation. Love talking to him about his family and his food and his comedy roots, which are very unique in a way, very unique, which makes him unique. And you're going to love this conversation. Today's show is brought to you by TomPapa.com. What? Yeah. Another very funny comedian. I've got some shows coming up this week. I am heading off to Florida. I don't think you can get tickets for these shows. But then next week, I'm coming to Red Bank, New Jersey, at the Count Basie Theater and the Egg in Albany. And that'll be my big birthday weekend, actually. I'm starting it off on doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which will air next Saturday, which is the 12th. Very excited to go back to Chicago and record that show. And then roll into Albany at the Egg and then Count Basie Theater in Red Bank. A lot of Jersey people coming out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I love that whole theater group. I've actually never performed in the Count Basie Theater. I did their outdoor thing during COVID. And this one, there's still some tickets available. So come out, and it's going to be a great show. I don't think there's that many left for either of those. But just go online. Go to TomPapa.com. That's why they're the sponsor. And they'll show you. Also going to Portland and a bunch of other shows. I have been home, I think, 5 days out of October. Yeah, I think literally 5 days. And not in a row. Not in a row. I had an insane 24-hour trip to Virginia Beach this weekend that was just bonkers and is making me think that maybe American Airlines and I have to break up. They've just, you know, sometimes you're in a relationship and the person that you're with is just abusive and they keep letting you down and you keep staying in there because you have history. And I have a lot of history with them. But I don't know. I think they're telling me maybe it's time to see other people. Maybe I've got to go hang out with my friends at Delta. 5 days. I'm a little burnt. I'm not drunk, but I am drinking this beautiful Chateau Neuf de Pop. Mm-mm-mm. It is a beautiful wine. And also on the flight, I was rereading. Every once in a while, these are the things that I do. Every once in a while, I take down John Updike and I'll read him. And every once in a while, I'll take out Walt Whitman and I'll read him. And it's these writers, they kind of knock something loose when I'm in between projects or thinking about writing. And those are two giants who a lot of times you get turned on to when you're young, and then you kind of move forward and then you don't go back because that was a phase of, you know, when you first discover those writers. And I refuse to let that happen. So even at my age, every once in a while, I'll crack them open. And, you know, there's a different perspective at different ages when you read that stuff. Another person, another insanely talented writer who I've, and novelist and poet who I've talked about on this program before, is the giant Jim Harrison. And I just had my iPad out on the flights. And like I said, a little burnt out, a little boozy, but something about reading Jim Harrison, it just, my brain wakes up and dusts off and starts wanting to go write itself. And I came across this poem called Broom that he included. I think it was probably somewhere else, but he included it in A Really Big Lunch, which I definitely recommend that you read. A Really Big Lunch. He wrote a lot of articles for Esquire on food and wine and life. And that collection is just great. And you can just, it's a whole bunch of essays and you just kind of drop in, read about these great wines, the Chateau Neuf de Pops. This actually, this Pied Long comes from a domain, Tempierre, which is one that I literally started drinking because of this man. He, you know, not a picture of health at the end, ended up with diabetes and gout and a whole bunch of complications. But man, he lived life and he ate and drank all of the best things that he possibly could. And every time I read him, I want to go eat and drink as well. But then I also don't want gout. So I put the brakes on at some point. And maybe that's why I'm not a mountain of a poet as he was. But let me, I figure I'll just read this poem to you. And don't get weird. This isn't, we're not at a poetry reading. I'm not going to slam poetry read you. I'm just going to read some of his words. Because as we're coming into this time of year, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting a little more quiet than you're used to. And then we'll go into this interview with Nimesh Patel. This is called Broom. And these are the words of Jim Harrison, a giant. To remember that you're alive, visit the cemetery of your father at noon after you've made love and are still wrapped in mammalian odor that you were forced to cherish. Under each stone is someone's inevitable surprise, the unexpected death of their biology that struggled hard as it must. Now, go home without looking back at the fading cemetery. Enough is enough. But stop on the way to buy the best wine you can afford and a dozen stiff brooms. Have a few swallows, then throw the furniture out the window and then begin sweeping. Sweep until you've swept the walls bare of paint, and at your feet, sweep the floor until it disappears. Finish the wine in this field of air. Go back to the cemetery in the dark and weave through the stones a slow dance of your name visible only to birds. What does it mean? I don't know. That's up to you. All right. Enjoy this conversation with Nimesh Patel. He's a very funny comedian. Make sure you look up all of his stuff online also. And I think you're really going to enjoy this. And this is me and my Jersey pal, Nimesh.
Thanks for being here. This is a real treat. I was happy to actually sit with you in person.
Yeah. Zoom is always like, obviously, like the intangible thing is that it's not tangible. You know? It's like there's something in that that's just gone. I think it's a lot easier to pretend how you're feeling when you're on a Zoom.
Yeah.
And I kind of hide it. Whereas here, it's like it feels a lot more honest and earnest.
Immediately.
You know?
Yeah. It's weird because like it technically works. Like you can get an interesting conversation and it can work. But from doing my radio show, I'll run into people who I've only met doing that through Zoom. Mm-hmm. And they don't even clock that we met.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, we had a conversation, right?
Yeah, right. Right. But yeah, this is really great. Normally, I would bake you bread.
Uh-huh.
But I was in Vegas the last two nights.
Betting?
So, no gambling. Uh-huh. Because I really kind of feel like I should gamble, like, just a little bit, but I've never won.
Yeah.
So, I'm just like, I don't see the appeal.
I hear that. I have gambled quite a bit, but I'm net down a lot, but I stopped. Uh-huh. But I only gamble when I go to casinos. I'm not like one of these, I'm on my phone constantly playing poker or whatever the fuck, you know, like
yeah.
It bothers me when I see comedians like shilling gambling stuff.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, you get your bag, but it's also like, that is a vice. You are selling an addiction right now.
I know. I was saying that last night that I don't know. I'm not like, it's cool that weed is legal and it's cool that gambling is now legal. Like everyone's been wanting that for a long time. I'm not convinced it's all going to work out.
Yeah. I mean, I like weed, so I'm pro that.
Totally.
But I'm also, I think we can be speaking the same language in the sense like there is something wrong with these things.
Right.
So you shouldn't be like, hey, like let's black out tonight. You know, like it's like and go gamble all fortunes away or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something about it that feels like, all right, it's a prime time for comedians to be finally recognized as people who can help sell things.
Right. Sure.
But it's also like,
yeah. Now they come to you and say, we would like you to be a part of this campaign. We're sorry, it's only going to pay $500,000.
Yes.
I'll do it. It's not my responsibility how people are going to use this and abuse this.
I haven't been given a check that I can say no to yet. You know, it's like if that were to come, if I were in a position to say no to a check,
yeah,
then I would consider. I'm not in a position to say no to that, but like it would have to be a pretty, like, not evil, but like I don't know if I could pitch gambling for anything less than $500,000.
You know? Just to go on record.
Yeah.
I once went, Kathleen Madigan and I were doing a corporate gig in, I think it was in D.C. And I got there and it was like in the Four Seasons, but like a real small room in the Four Seasons. Uh-huh. And I came down, and Kathleen is always so funny. It's just like, you see what we're doing here? Like, no, what is it? And then it was like a subsidiary, I think, of Philip Morris.
Nice.
And they were selling like some kind of like non-smokable tobacco. Like it wasn't chewing tobacco, but it was like maybe pouches. I don't forget what it was. But whatever it was like, are we going to do this? It's like, well, we're here.
We're not putting the tobacco in their mouths.
Right, exactly.
We're not saying you should.
Yeah, the pay is pretty good. We're just telling jokes. Someone's going to tell them jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it becomes when I do see people that have a real hardline moral character or like they've got real rules, I'm pretty envious. Like,
yeah,
that's pretty noble.
Yeah. Are those people also rich?
No, they're poor.
Yeah.
So. No, exactly. So when I was in Vegas, not gambling, I couldn't bake you bread, which I will, at some point I will give you my bread.
Thank you.
It's very close to this. Uh-huh. This is my favorite bread in LA.
How do I break this off?
You don't have to eat it now. You can bring it to your hotel. You can do whatever you want. You can just smell it for now.
I'm going to Bert's podcast after this.
Oh, you are?
So maybe Bert and I will break the bread that you've brought.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. That would be great. Okay, no, these guys are solid. They've been on the podcast before. They make an amazing, amazing bread. And yeah, share it with Bert. That would be great.
Yeah, no, for sure. I will.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How is that big guy doing? I haven't seen
I've
him.
I've never
in a bit.
Met him.
Oh, you never met him?
I haven't met him.
Oh,
so, set it up. I'm going to hang out.
You're going to have a great time. This.
Yeah, yeah. He seems cool.
Very cool.
I watched some of what he did. Like, I have this policy, and I don't know if it's a policy so much laziness. It's just like, I don't watch anything. I don't listen to anything. Like, even this. Like, I saw half of a quarter of what you did with Maz, because I know Maz. I'm like, what are y'all going to talk about? And so, okay, we're going to eat and bullshit. Okay, that, I can do that. I do that all the time. And so I watched a little bit of Bert's stand-up just to, like, what is... I don't even know. I know the machine bit, but that's
right.
It. And I saw a little bit of it. I was like, okay, I get this guy.
So is that a conscious thing to keep in your own...
It's just, like, blinders on. I think when I started, I was... You know, I started in 09, and I was never a curious student about anything necessarily.
Uh-huh.
Like, even if I'm looking back at, like, from elementary school till like today, like I never fully developed a curiosity for things.
Uh-huh.
I was always just good at figuring stuff out.
Interesting.
And so when I started, I was like, okay, I know Chris Rock, obviously, you know, like, I grew up watching Chris. I know Russell Peters because a little bit, because in 04 Russell's stand-up special leaked on YouTube,
right?
And it was like, how my the only other Indian kid on my floor and I, we bonded over that,
right?
You know, that was like 04, like, oh, this is crazy, Indian guy doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And so I knew a little bit of Russell, I knew a little bit of Dave, I knew of Dave, I knew Chris is Bigger and Blacker, like, my friends and I quoted that all throughout high school.
Yeah.
But beyond that, when I started comedy, I was never, like, I'm still not
right
a huge student of it. Like, I'm envious of people who are, like, scholars. You remember that Carlin bit, or that that, you know, Tony Rock bit, or whatever? I'm like, no, I don't know anything,
right?
And, like, I've tried to be like, oh, let me watch some Pryor. I've listened to Pryor a lot. And then some of Dave, some Chris, but
yeah,
it's been a conscious thing because and Hedberg, but it was a conscious thing because I caught myself early being like, I can, my ear is such that it will emulate what it is obsessed with.
Right.
So if I'm constantly listening to Hedberg and you listen to my early stuff on like on tape, that's on tape. It's like everyone's like, oh, he sounds a little bit like Mitch Hedberg. I'm like, I guess I was listening too much to Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
And then as I evolved, I was like, I got to just stop.
Yeah.
Anything. Because
right.
On top of sounding like anyone, I don't want to be influenced or hear something. And that, and then, did I hear that 5 years ago from a fucking Chappelle tape or something?
You know, like, yeah, I know. That. Those are the worst when you're like, why is this so funny?
Yeah.
Wait, like, a minute. I didn't. Did I was this me?
Yeah. And, you know, there's moments like that where I'm like, no, like, it feels like there's enough comedy police around to be like, no, that's someone else's thing.
Right. They'll tell you.
Yeah. And but beyond, like, I don't want that to ever even be an influence at all. So I'm just like, let me just focus on my own shit. And I think what ends up happening is if you are so focused on, if you're paying attention to what everyone else is doing, you tend to lose focus on what you're doing, or you,
sure,
that comparison kind of will rob you of the joy of it.
Now, are you that way with all, like, acting and
I don't know,
everything?
Yeah, everything.
Like, it's not just stand up. Like, you just kind of like,
I have had blinders on for the last like 2.5 years, 3 years of, like, what anyone's doing outside of my friends group, which is a very small number of people. Like, I don't know what, and even within my friends group, I don't know what anyone's doing. I always hear about it, like, on Variety. It's like, if someone posts something, oh, that's good for you, congratulations.
Right.
But that's just, you know, again, like, a lack of curiosity it started as, but now it's more just like self, I'm just focused on what I'm doing and trying to cultivate what I got going on my own, you know?
Yeah. I remember when I first got to the Comedy Cellar, it was a problem because I was following Attell like almost every night and watching him and hearing him and thinking, like, it was,
how long ago was this?
This was 90.
Oh, OG shit. Yeah.
This was like 97, something like that. And, I learned quickly, I can't watch. I have to not be aware of who's going on before me.
Yeah.
And it was that complete thing of, not to the extent that you're doing it, but that thing of let's put the blinders on so I can go do my thing. Mm-hmm. What's cool about what you're doing is everything's kind of derivative of other things in a way. Yeah. I remember this acting teacher telling me that, and this was, you know, back when I was in college, was that actors, you're never going to have a pure actor because we've all been influenced by other actors. Yeah. We've all seen TV and commercials. This is before, you know, the explosion now. And he said, we're never going to have those pure actors that saw like a movie, mm-hmm. or saw, you know, they just lived their life,
right,
and came into it. And that's kind of cool because you're kind of constructing that.
I'm trying
for yourself.
I'm trying to unlearn whatever I have learned that's in there, and then trying to just just develop my own stuff.
Right.
Whatever that voice is necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, like I did a show, was it 2 weeks ago? It was in Marquette, Michigan. I did like this weed festival.
Uh-huh.
And the check was good. and so I went up to do it. And there's a first show, or probably one of the first, maybe I've only done like 5 shows high, uh-huh. right, in my whole life,
yeah.
in my career. And this time I got high on stage because it was outside and we could legally smoke. And I was like, oh, I'm taking advantage of this shit.
Yeah.
And at some point, like, I was high and I heard myself. I was like, I sound like Dave. And it's like, and I was talking to my friend Mookie, who was with me, and he's like, yeah, it's like when you get high, your brain goes to like this kind of defensive place,
uh-huh.
where you're going to go back on your old ass latencies, things that are like deeply ingrained in your brain.
Right.
And it's not even like the it was just like, you know, Dave has kind of like this rolling cadence at the end where he goes, and then, you know, like, it's kind of hard to explain. It's like almost philosophical when he's waxing on stage sometimes. And I caught myself doing that.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, it's still in there. And like, there's moments where I can like make a Chris face.
Yeah.
And I can see myself doing that. Or I can hear myself doing a little headberg. I'm like, okay, like these will be shaken off.
But, right, right.
It's just those moments where I'm like, nope, I got to just keep.
Yeah.
Like this, you know what I mean?
Look, everybody, you know, you're in this thing that you love to do, mm-hmm. and you're seeing people who you love to watch doing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's that old story about Bill Cosby. You ever hear the...
I've heard a few Bill Cosby stories.
Yeah. and that he, when he was young, like he went, he had a headlining thing. He was just starting to pop. And I think it was Pryor, right? That he
contemporaries, yeah.
Yeah, and he, the first set, he wasn't himself. He was doing this new influence. You know, he was leaning into someone else's voice. Mm-hmm. I think it was Pryor's. And his manager came back and said, I don't know who that was, but I'd like to see Bill do the second set.
Got it.
You know?
Yeah.
And he kind of shook it off. But you know, jazz, music, everybody, you know, there's influence. You'd have influence or you don't show up.
I don't know if it was me like looking for confirmation, but someone told me that if you can hear something and then like assume that kind of voice, like that's a sign of genius kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Like people who, like, I'm not saying I'm that, but I'm saying those people, if you have a really good ear and you could immediately kind of, mm-hmm. In a few days, like pick up what's going on and like emulate that language, then it's like a sign your brain is operating a different way. And I've always found like if I go to another country.
Yeah.
And it's a different language. When I went to New Orleans not too long ago, and I was there for like 3 days.
Right.
By the end of that third day, I was like, say, bro, like, beignet, man. Like, I was talking like that. And it was just because I was just, and I was surrounded by it constantly.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Say, bro, like, who am I? You know, like, I felt it.
I'm Cajun now.
Yeah. It was, and in Italy, like they say, at the end of it. No, yeah. And like, by the end, like, second day, I was like, yeah. Yeah, you know, like in India, same thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, I know what my ear is capable of doing.
Right.
And what my brain can pick up.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the reason I was like, I'm out. Like, I can't listen to anybody.
You don't have a traceable accent of a place.
I'm from New Jersey.
Yeah, but you don't. I'm from Jersey. You don't sound Jersey.
That's the thing. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to sound like.
Yeah,
but I think that's because this is just years of listening to random stuff, like DMX to Coldplay, Incubus to like Michael Jackson, like my parents, like my cousins, like everyone who's had I've been surrounded by has definitely just hit my ear, and it's just made this happen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and my dad.
I had to be corrected. They had to tell me in acting class, because I was playing someone in the Midwest, they're like, we're going to tell you some words that only people from New Jersey say them this way. Then I was just telling me coffee talk.
That's in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Coffee?
Yeah, you want some coffee? We're going to get some coffee. You want? We like to sit down and have some coffee and talk about it.
No. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Where in Jersey were you?
Parsippany. Born and raised. It's in Morris County. It's like 40 minutes out of New York on a good day.
Yeah.
But yeah, my parents landed in 81 and 79, I think.
Okay.
My mom and dad respectively, but they landed in Newark.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the time when Newark was transitioning from being like an okay place to live to like a not okay place to live. And it was, I think at that point, already kind of not that good, but it was cheap and it was like right outside the airport.
Yeah.
and so they lived there. And then I think my grandpa, my mom's dad got punched in the face in an elevator, like robbed.
Whoa.
And that was enough to be like, all right, we out.
Yeah.
We're going to the whitest place there is.
let's head whiter.
Yes. And they went to, and it was mildly racist, but it was just a function of the fact that they were in a very poor place.
Yeah.
And so they went to the whitest place they could, Parsippany, New Jersey, near the lake.
Right.
And then they lived there. They still have the house.
Oh, that's great.
My grandparents, my uncle still have the house. Obviously, my parents moved out and my mom moved out, got another spot, an apartment. But
right.
Yeah, so I've been born and raised in Parsippany.
Right.
And still there to this day, you know.
It's so funny. You don't know talk? You don't know that?
I guess I never make it a note to hear it. Like, then someone says talk. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Can I get some coffee? Yeah, sure. But that doesn't sound, I didn't know that was Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
How do people outside of Jersey say
talk?
What do
talk.
Oh, you say, it's like a W almost?
Yeah, they have a little W in there.
Got it. Coffee.
Yeah, coffee. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I can hear it now. I'll be paying attention to it now.
Yeah.
Although I haven't said coffee in a long time.
Who, were your parent? You said your mom moved out?
Yeah, so, well, in Indian families, it's like, you know, at least the generation above, it was, and they came when they were in their 20s. My mom, my two uncles and my mom's sister, my aunt, and my grandparents, they came, you know, my dad, my grandpa was probably in his 50s. My mom and her siblings were in their 20s. And they all lived in the same house.
Right.
In like a three-bedroom, four-bedroom. And then my uncle moved out, you know, when he got married. My mom moved out. My mom had a husband, moved out. My parents divorced when I was two. I got to know my father. My mom remarried, I think when I was four or so. So I don't know the exact timeline of transition from when they left my grandparents' house.
Right, right.
But the oldest son, my mom's oldest brother, stayed in my grandparents' house in Lake Parsippany. And then like my mom and the siblings like got their own houses.
Got it.
You know.
So you never met your father?
No. Wow. I have very limited, maybe one or two mental images, and even those are fuzzy. Like, I have no idea.
Are there pictures?
I've only seen one, I think.
Right.
And I thought it was my uncle because they look kind of the same.
Right.
But
did she remarry?
My mom remarried, yeah. She remarried when I was 4 years old.
So when you were four, right?
Yeah.
So that's your dad?
Yeah, I mean, I've never known any other father figure. So, like, it's all, like, I have clips on YouTube and TikTok and stuff where, like, people who are, like, super fans will be like, wait, he's talking about his parents' divorce, but now he's saying his dad got shot at. It's like, what are we talking? What is this? I'm like, how do you not make a logic leap? You know, like,
yeah.
If you're paying that close attention, I said father in one and dad in the other. Like,
yeah.
there's a slight difference here.
Right.
But I appreciate the
yeah, they're paying attention. Yeah.
Of it, but also, like, come on, guys, give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Is there, does that, does it, is he still alive? Do you know if he's alive?
I haven't had any contact. The last I heard about him or from him was, I don't even know how long ago, but he had, I think, messaged or got in touch with my mom about like child support that he thought he overpaid. And I was like, oh, okay. It's like that.
He wants some back.
Yeah, right. I see that. But outside, like, I never heard from him. And I don't, I'll probably go to therapy about it at some point. But not from like, I'm constantly thinking, like, what's going on?
Right.
But like, I'm sure there's a billion other things I got to unpack and figure out.
Right, sure.
About that. But
not to a point where you feel like it's affected your day to day.
No, not at all. Yeah. You know, like, there's been moments where I'm like, so I had, are we rolling right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So like I would strike this, but, I had a diagnosis of cancer.
You did?
Yes. Like, in February.
Whoa.
Of this year. And I'll tell you about that. But when that happened, we were all just like, how the fuck did that happen? Is it genetic or whatever? And then come to find out, my father's father had the same cancer. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. So there's some health stuff I probably don't know about.
Right.
But for all intents and purposes, I'm like fully healthy as a human being outside of that happened. But it's
right.
We excised it all and all that.
Oh, so, that's good. What was it?
Testicular cancer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's what my current hour on tour is about. Like, it was like, so I did.
Oh, right. You mentioned this on the radio.
Yeah.
Right.
I did like, you know, from April of last year to December of last year, I did 180, 200 shows or something. And I taped my special, Thank You China, at the end of the year.
Right.
And then in January, I was like, all right, well, you know how it is. Like, you don't want to do that shit ever again.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what the fuck am I going to talk about? And so I had like, I think like 20 shows from Jan 1 to February 1, let's say. And in that, those 20 shows, I was just floundering. I was looking for stuff. I was, you know, on stage with notes, but I did Cobbs.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, 500 seats, 400 seats, four shows, fully sold out, but just like a notepad on stage. Like, yeah. What do you want to talk about? You know? And it was fun. I had a great time.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like I was given, I wasn't taking advantage of the opportunity that I had because I was still trying to construct a new set and not, I didn't want to do all the old stuff. Like, it was just in me to not do it.
Wait, what was the thing? What was the opportunity you weren't taking advantage of?
The opportunity being like, I have this stage right now. Like,
right.
I'm just here fucking around like it's open mic.
Right.
I'm talking to the crowd and instead of like working on another hour.
Right.
I know that the starting process is like, that's
part
how
of
it
that.
Is.
Yeah.
But I felt like this, like, I remember San Francisco being such a big show to me because it was Cobbs. It was, you know, my biggest show to date at that point of, you know, fully sold out weekend. And it's like, my people are here
because
all the other shows I've done, you know, Midwest, you know, here and there, like Texas, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this as a bad thing. I think it's a great thing. It's all been like a huge demo of like white people, black people, Indian people, Spanish people, every age range.
Right.
But San Francisco had that plus like a huge Indian population. I'm like, I got these people here.
Yeah.
And I could talk to them. I fucked around a lot.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like I had done... I didn't want to do the set that I had done already. Like, I was like, I'm tired with that.
Right.
And these people don't know the process of comedy, but I feel like I got to do these note shits because I'm not going to do the old set. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that was that set of shows was the last week of January.
Okay.
And so that following week was my birthday week. I was like, I'm going to be in New York. I'm going to take off, hang out with my wife, hang out with my friends, whatever. My sister's in town. I'm going to chill. Birthday night. I got pain in my balls. I go to the hospital. Doctor's like, you know, a few days later, doctor diagnoses you got cancer. I'm like, what the fuck? And literally just those 6 days, I just scribbled notes every day. Like, because you know when something's happening to you that you got to talk about at some point. And I was just scribbling notes the entire time. I had the surgery, had the test cancer removed, all that.
Right.
And then I was like, all right, well, I guess I got another hour. You know? And I was just being
something to talk about.
Yeah, and I was just being that for the last, you know, few months.
Wow.
And so it's been a kind of crazy thing to have experienced, but I'm also like very grateful I got this cancer, which is a weird thing to say. You know, I'm not trying to downplay it, but I'm also like, it's kind of nuts that, no pun intended, like that's what happened.
Right. I'm sorry, did you say you didn't want to talk about it?
No, I don't want to do. I can talk about the itself, but the instant I start talking about it, I feel like I'll go into the bit.
Oh, I got you.
You know what I mean? Like, like I've said it so many times.
Some jokes to write.
Yeah. I don't want to do that.
Okay. But it's okay to just discuss it.
I'm fine. I'm fine talking about it in the sense that I had it.
Right.
And that's what happened. And that's what I'm talking about.
That sounds like it was kind of short. Like you.
It was.
You had the pain. You.
Like honestly, you know, I say this as a joke, and it's probably the one joke I'll tell you right now. But I went from literally Thursday night balls hurt to Tuesday cancer free.
I just lost a filling, and it's taking me longer. to get in and get it replaced.
It was like the, you know, it was like I had like fucking Amazon Prime of like it was so fast.
Yeah,
and I talk a lot of like my entire last special. This is probably like 10 minutes of talking shit about the American healthcare system.
Right,
and I still feel very strongly the American healthcare system is absolute garbage.
Yeah,
but there is some silver lining in the fact that if you have very good insurance,
right,
you can and some connections, you can, remove cancer before it's even a fucking thing, before it even crosses your brain.
If you have the money,
you know?
Yeah, the connections.
2 days later, I was eating Indian food. Like, it was like,
right.
I was eating the best Indian food I've ever had in my entire life. Like,
right.
That's the American healthcare system, you know?
Yeah. So, is there a concern, like, you have to keep
of remission?
Getting
tests? Yeah. Yeah, so I have to get a CAT scan every 6 months for the next 10 years.
10 years.
I was a bit concerned about the protocol initially because there's a kind of two schools of thought. And the leading school of thought is, and it used to be once a quarter that you had to get a CAT scan. Or you get radiated, you get radiation just to make sure.
Regardless. Yeah.
And then you get a CAT scan once a year, or you get a CAT scan, and then the literature kind of changed a little bit. It's like you can do a CAT scan every 6 months, not get chemo at all. And just monitor what's going on. And I caught it so early that it was like, you know, a very low chance. And I had like, the doctor said like the best kind of this that you're going to get.
Oh, great.
So.
That's great.
Yeah. It was very,
what
very kind, grateful.
What was the pain like that you knew, like, I got to get this checked? Because we all have little pains here and there,
the thing,
right?
It was, you know, have you ever had a hernia before?
No.
Okay. So a hernia is when like part of your intestine comes out of your abdominal cavity, right? And it's like. It could be very dangerous, but for the most part, from what I understand, it's not dangerous. You can push it back in, but the recommended procedure is get a surgery on your groin to keep put a mesh in.
Yeah.
But that pain is like a sharp pain in your balls. And I had that 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I had a hernia 6 years ago. And I remember that pain being like, oh, this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But it was like random. It wasn't constant. It was just random. Like it would happen like when I was using the bathroom or if I was laying down, I would have like a sharp pain and I was like, fuck. And I went to the doctor. The doctor was like, yeah, you have hernia. You got to get surgery. I'm like, okay, cool. But like the doctor said, I could wait for surgery. Like if I had stuff to do, like it's not going to kill me if I wait. Like but I was like, I have time. Let me get it done. So that's what I thought this was.
Right.
I thought I had re-aggravated a hernia because I was working out a lot more than I had been. And maybe I lifted a little too heavy or something like that. And so maybe I re-aggravated this hernia. And I was in the bathroom after, you know, we come back from dinner, my sister, my wife and I, and I'm like, if it's a re-aggravated hernia, I want to know that that's what it is.
Yeah.
Let me go to the, and my concern was that it was torsion, which is like, when your testicle, there's a tube that connects to your testicles.
Right.
Like supplies blood. Sometimes your ball will like twist.
Uh-huh.
And it could happen naturally if you play with it too much. Like it could twist and not, and like cut off that blood supply, and you have to get that remedied immediately.
Uh-huh.
Or you could lose the testicle.
Right.
So I was like, if there's a slight chance that there's torsion, and I'm catching it early, I need to go right now because I don't want to fucking, I'm not losing a ball over
this. Right. Did you know torsion from Google? Or you knew?
It was Google.
It was one of those. Google, you were busy.
Yeah. And I was like, shit, all right. And I was like, well, if it's a hernia, the doctor will tell me it's a hernia. Like, I'll just wait until I'm done with touring and stuff and I'll get the surgery then.
Yeah.
If it's torsion, then I got to get the shit fixed right now because, you know, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, you know, go to the hospital like 3 o'clock in the morning. They do an ultrasound. They tell me it's not torsion. I'm like, all right, cool. And then they're like, you have a mass. I'm like, I don't know what that means. But then, and then the whole process started.
Right.
But the crazy shit is the doctor, you know, after everything had been done, after the surgery and all that, he was telling me, is just like, you know, like, the, because he initially said it was nothing. Mm. He initially said it was like, you know, some other epididymitis, like inflammation of the tube, yeah, or something like that. And because the cancer doesn't present with pain. It doesn't present. It's not normally doesn't present with. Normally it's a mass. You feel it.
Right.
But mine was so, I literally call it like, I think the doctor said like weeks from formation. Because normally you feel a mass on your, but I didn't feel anything. It was right. So small, and it was intra. It was like in the middle.
Oh, and so there's no way.
Yeah. So there's no way I was gonna feel it.
Yeah.
And but I was just enough of a fucking pansy or whatever you want to call it,
or just yeah, or just
listening to my body. Yeah. Like if there's one message I want to relay, like on a serious note, like listen to your body. It's telling you something.
Yeah.
And so I just listened, and I went, and they're like, it's mass, and then the whole process got started.
Right. And wow.
Yeah. It was kind of, it was
pretty lucky.
That's the tour is called Lucky Lefty for a reason. I got very lucky. Yeah. And I'm very grateful for all of it, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of weird to say, like,
yeah.
Like, but, and part of me is happy that it happened because I didn't have shit.
Yeah. I know. That's where I'm at right now.
No material.
I'm like, so all that stuff you did at Cobb's got pretty much thrown out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got some of those jokes are good. And yeah. Like, I have, you know, notes from it all. But yeah. It was just like, who cares now? I'm like, oh, baby, I got a new hour. You know, I can't wait. I was so excited to go back on the road.
It's so funny.
You know, just talk about stuff. I think it's like a comic mentality. I was like, something bad happened? Good. Like, excellent.
Thank God.
Yeah.
It's funny because I'm literally going to Cobb's this weekend in that same mindset of like, I just taped something. So I'm like, that thing of how loose and like, as soon as you said, like, you're just up there with notes in front of 400 people just doing it. I'm like, I don't know if I'm that brave.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like I don't want to sound like I didn't do anything that I had done before.
Yeah.
That I hadn't done. I did a few.
Sure. Like
some of the hits, so to speak.
Yeah.
But
let them know you're still funny.
Yeah. Like, guys, don't worry. Like, this is just how it goes.
Yeah.
But it just felt, like, starting from scratch almost, and like whatever frustration comes from that, but also like the excitement that comes from that. I knew I could build something. I had hope I would pull something out of somewhere. I just didn't know that it would be from the divine, like,
right? Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. But that thing at Cobb's, not to put cancer on the back burner.
No, please.
But that thing of like the balance of, all right, this is a big show for me in San Francisco. I've got all these people showing up.
Yeah.
My people are showing up.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a good show, but I've also got work to do.
Yep.
That balance.
It's so hard.
It is hard.
You know, what I found, and I'm not sure, I mean, you've obviously been in the game a lot longer, but when it comes to appealing to your audience and like educating your audience, like for me, and tell me what it is for you, like, every time I do a show, I ask, like, who here has never been to a live comedy show before?
Uh-huh.
And it's a good number of people.
Really?
I'm a lot of people's first comedian.
Wow.
Which to me, I used to think that was kind of a burden, but now I enjoy the opportunity to be like, this is the process of the show. This is how things get built. I'm glad I'm your first person. I'm sorry if this is not going to meet your expectations.
Uh-huh.
Uproarious. I'm shitting on everybody, making fun of people, all this kind of stuff. But this is how I work. This is what's going to happen right now.
That's pretty great.
You know?
Yeah.
How's it for you?
It's like, a good opportunity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never like had that conversation with them, you know, like to kind of figure it out. I have this real need in me to crush.
Yeah, I wish I had more of that.
You know what I mean? But yeah, but I wish I had more of the let's not treat every set like it's like, for me, the most work I get done is at the store, at the Cellar, at Largo, like, because that environment seems like I can, it's okay to screw up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if they're coming out and paying and this is their Saturday night and they're like so excited to see me, I want to make sure that they leave like, yes, and we'll come back again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's that balance.
I struggle with that because, you know, I also ask, who was here the last time I was here? And it's like 10 people. I'm like, marketing's great. Retention, not so good. But I'll get you back. I'll get something, will hit you. Don't worry. But it just feels like it's such a difficult thing to walk. And I, I, I've been very grateful and happy that people have come out in droves and like taken a chance on me, as their first comic ever. And I feel like those people are very satisfied. I think it's the people
they
who
want
are
to be
like,
with you. They want to, there is that thing, you know, Carlin would do it, you know, and they it's the process, and it's there's a going to the therapy thing, like there's something in me that wants to please in this way that probably isn't so healthy either. What do you attribute all these people being, you are being their first comedy show?
It's just TikTok, you know, like we spoke about it last time, but it's like,
right,
you know, and I'll talk about it ad nauseum until TikTok gives me money to talk about it, you know, because I should guys, hello, what are we talking about here? I'll say it in Mandarin if you need,
Mr. TikTok. If you're out there.
It's like, it's been such a I think like people who knock it or think are afraid to approach it or whatever think that, and I was this way too. So who is this for? Is it for kids? Like, what? Who's on this shit?
Right.
Like, what's called TikTok?
Yeah.
And then my wife told me to get on it when, you know, early on in like June of 2020. And I listened a little bit, but not fully. Like, I didn't put stand up out there until like December of 2020.
Right.
When my other friend told me to do it. You know how that goes.
Confirmation.
And, but what I found was that, and it surprises me to this day, TikTok hits everybody.
Yeah.
And people, the algorithm knows you so well that it will serve you something that it 9 times out of 10 you will probably like if you give it a little time. And if you're searching for stand up and you're, you know, an 80-year-old white lady who is from Tacoma, Washington, and for whatever reason you're interested in comedy and this voice of this Indian man who's not talking about being Indian but other stuff speaks to you, you're gonna want to come to the show,
right?
And that's what I found. It's just been like that platform of distribution is so strong and beyond I can comprehend it a little bit, but like obviously the algorithm is so much more knowledgeable about the fan base that I built,
right?
And it's just done such a good job of sending it out to people.
Isn't that interesting that the algorithm is more in tune with your people than you are?
Yes, it's terrifying, but it's also, you know, I'm not artificial intelligence. I know I think I can tell from like a human perspective what it is about my set or stand, like the clips that I've have put out that speak to people, that resonate with people, that it's just fun. Like they like a snarky, slightly seems like an asshole but not an asshole
right
guy, like who can write jokes and is like insightful in different ways. I'm toot my own horn here, but like I think that I can see in common with everyone that's at the show,
right?
What it is specific, like even deeper than that, I don't know, you know, there's something deeper,
but there's something deeper because like that makes perfect sense in describing who you are,
right?
And why people like you,
right?
But it doesn't explain how the algorithm starts spreading that.
Have you
done anything other than just put your stuff up? Like, are you conscious of trying to put it up a certain way or trying to?
I mean, so like when I first started doing it, you know, and I started really going pretty hard on it in December 2020, January 2021.
Yeah.
And then like I was constantly putting stuff out, but it was all just like my older, like I taped I don't want to call it special, but an hour at the Cellar in 2019.
Right.
I called it Jokes for Quarantine. I put it on YouTube, excuse me.
Right.
And it did pretty well. And I was like, then I had my editor chop that up. And I was like, let me just put this on TikTok. And I kind of just put it out in order. And then had a bunch of other TikTok seller clips. And I put all those out. And then I started kind of learning what was working, what wasn't working, trying to make adjustments and that, this and that, here and there.
Yeah.
It became like, okay, now I have all this stuff, that material that I've don't care about anymore.
Uh-huh.
I've kind of exhausted that resource.
Right.
What am I going to do? And then it became like, then I was bringing a camera to like every show I was doing. And at this point I was already kind of touring when I had gone through all my luckily I had so much material because Salah records all the clips. So I had all that shit.
Right.
But once I started touring, I was like, okay, well, I don't want to put anything I'm touring with out. What's going to happen? And I, you know, you do shows, crowd work will happen,
right?
things, people will say things, you'll inherently talk to somebody if you're doing an hour, like something's gonna, because I wasn't going up with a fully polished hour.
Right.
I was trying to like fish and see what was going on.
Yeah.
And inherent, like in that, something will happen.
Yeah.
And I ended up putting those TikTok, like those crowd work clips on TikTok, and crowd work just like, it is something beyond funny that's hitting people.
Right.
It's like the kind of the people love the quickness of the mind and like the rawness of it or whatever it is. And it became like, oh, okay, so crowd work is what's gonna move tickets.
Right.
And
interesting.
To the I don't know, the detriment almost of it, mm-hmm. is like I know at shows, people, like a lot of people will still come thinking it's going to be crowd work.
Right.
And that's another education process.
Right.
Like, oh, you think it's going to be crowd work for 45 an hour? Are you kidding me? I know you've never been to a comedy show, but this is not how they go.
Yeah.
And so like, and then once my special was taped, I had another, you know, I did 2 hours in December of last year, like all the stuff I cut from the hour and then the hour itself.
Oh,
and so I had, you know, another 60, 120 clips I could just put out there and re-educate people of like, it's not just crowd work, it's gonna be.
So did they start getting just as much response with the written material as
Like some of them do well, some of them do whatever, like I had to, at some point I had to like get out of my brain to stop like tracking everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hired a social media team based here in LA, in Nashville, called CrowdSurf, and like they've been tremendous in terms of everything from executing really. Like,
yeah.
I'm still kind of guiding strategy and stuff, but they also have strategy thoughts. I'm like, hey, let's do a crowd work thing here, an old school clip.
Right.
And TikTok, like we figured out, like you can use old clips, new clips, like
right.
how to change the captions, all that kind of stuff, all the algorithm stuff. But
yeah.
They've been very beneficial. They've been very helpful in like just executing, which was the tediousness of it. I just hate it. It was killing me.
Yeah. Now to do it yourself is
But so they, to answer your question, I still guide a little bit, but they're the ones like fully executing stuff.
Right.
But yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. Is it like when you start venturing into like what seems like it is a pretty thoughtful new direction for this chunk after this experience that you went through, and you're working on that, is that a different mindset now? It almost seems like that's, you're like the band making an album.
Yeah.
And then you're also popping out singles.
That's a great analogy. Yeah, it is a different mindset. The mindset is the same that I had in last year when I was like, I'm working towards making a very good hour.
Yeah.
Right? And I had set myself a deadline, like I want to be done by December.
Right.
It already kind of, I'm sure, have you come up against this where like you feel like it's done, but it's like maybe you have a deadline or an artificial deadline or whatever it is, and you're like, but I can't be done with it just yet. Like I still got all these dates to do or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like back then. That's what it feels like now. But
yeah.
I know it's not done yet because I'm still trying to figure out like how I want to perform it. Does it belong in a theater? Does it belong in a club?
Right.
How do I get into it? This like stuff around the set. And I have to tell myself that this is what I have to work on this hour, because the temptation is just like when I get bored.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm gonna fuck around for 30 minutes. Like I did that in Denver at Comedy Works.
Yeah.
And it was, I just had to remind myself I'm funny.
Yeah.
You're like, I can just talk and have a good time.
Isn't it amazing how many times you have to tell yourself that?
Yeah, like, man, the first show was great.
Wait, I'm funny.
Yeah, first show was great, but it's like I just did a bunch of stuff I wrote already. Like, I can think off the cuff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I fully thought out. Let me figure it out on stage. So I had to do that to get that out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that'll happen every few weeks. I'm just like, I'll just go up with a glass of wine. Like, I don't... I have it in my back pocket if I want, guys, but you know, I'm in a mood. And that's literally what I said in Denver. I was like, I'm in a mood, guys. Like, what's your deal? You know, it was like that. And so that mindset I have to keep this kind of thing I want to finish.
Yeah.
And I think to keep that interesting, like I try to switch up, add new jokes. Like I'll pace around my room in a hotel room at night, just like, what's missing? Like, how can I say this differently?
Right.
What's that, like, what's a new way to do it? And that's that MO, like, is something I constantly have to tell myself and learn. Cause you know, I've only been on the road it sounds like a long time, 2 years, but it's a year and a half or whatever. But
yeah,
it's not a long time.
It's not at all.
You know, like,
no.
You guys are that road. You guys are out like constantly. It's like it's a lot to me. It's a lot to people around me, like my peers and my family and stuff. Like, you're gone all the time. Like, I'm trying to figure out how I'm not gone all the time, but this might be what it is for a while.
Yeah. Like, well, you're working on this. It's like a project, you know? Back to your mom. Is she a good cook?
She is a phenomenal cook.
Is she?
The crazy shit is she's vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
But her chicken, I would put up against like some chicken I've had at restaurants. I've had at Sema in New York.
Yeah.
Sema's, you know, just won the Michelin star. The chicken I had at Sema tastes like exactly like the chicken my mom used to make.
Really?
Mom makes. I'm like, God, like, this is incredible. You know? And so my mom is a very good cook. My dad can cook too. He just doesn't as often. But he can cook like a few dishes that he likes really well, like egg curry that he really loves, and
right.
a few other things that I haven't, not a big fan of, but he can make really well. But my mom can whip stuff up, like looking at a recipe. Okay, I know what to do here.
Really?
And I have to make it a point to like, I studied her khichdi recipe, which is like a lentil rice with turmeric and garlic. And I taped her making that so I can make it at some point.
Smart.
Because like Indian cooking is very not scientific, you know. There's like this more art and like feel and smell. Like
you gotta
add garlic when the onions stop smelling like onions. Like when they turn, you gotta add the garlic. When the garlic, you gotta add the turmeric when the garlic stops smelling. Like that's when it's cooked. Like that kind of stuff.
I'm
like,
right.
Put 3 fingers of water in the dish. I'm like, what are you talking about? In the pressure cooker. I'm like, oh, okay. 3 fingers. Sure. Thank you, Mom.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff. So she's a very good cook.
That's great. What was your was when you were growing up, was the chicken dish the dish, or was it?
So growing up, it was, it's bad to look back in hindsight and think like, man, I was such an asshole not appreciating all this delicious Indian food that I was getting. But it was just, you know, a lot of, you eat with your eyes, and a lot of Indian food was not appealing aesthetically at the time. And nor is it still to this day.
Yeah. But, it looks a little mushy sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes it can look like, man, that's okra? Sure. Like,
I try to get my daughter to that. I'm like, was it Abu Gobi?
Uh-huh.
And she's like, yeah. I'm like, this is all the stuff you love.
Yeah, it's cauliflower.
It's cauliflower.
It,
yeah,
you'll love it.
She's like,
no. Yeah.
Now she's getting to an age where she can.
There's a Gobich Batakanushak, which is like when I was a kid, my grandma would make it. And it's cabbage and potatoes and spices.
Oh.
It's shock, which is, you know, just a vegetable dish that you eat with bread. And I don't know when I turned on it, but I used to hate it. And then at some point I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever had in my whole life. I would just eat like mountains of it. You know,
really?
It was so
pronounce
good.
Pronounce it again.
Gobich Batakanushak.
Okay.
Gobich is cabbage. Gobich. Bataka is potato. Bataka. Shak is the dish itself. Yeah.
Got it.
And it was just, and I'd just eat it with puri, like, you know, fried bread. And be like, man, this is so goddamn good.
Yeah.
And that was like one of my favorite dishes growing up. And my mom would make chicken, two different kinds of chicken, like orange chicken, not Chinese orange chicken, but like that was just the color.
Right. Yeah. From the turmeric. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. From the turmeric and the, what's it called? The paprika and all that.
Right.
And then my mom would make this brown chicken. I don't know what was it. That's the chicken that's like Sema's chicken.
Uh-huh.
I was like, this is incredible. I don't know how you make it. Anytime my cousins come over and eat it, they're like, this is the greatest thing we've ever had. I'm like, it is. It's so good.
So
it's
are so you pretty flavorful. Good if you're tracking your mom and trying to
I've never committed to making food,
really.
Yeah, like I think when pandemic started, my mom gave me like a bunch of cheat codes, basically like spice packets you can buy on Amazon. That like, because she couldn't do it with her own spices, she'd be like, just use this and marinate it,
packing it.
Yeah, and like they were amazing.
Yeah,
but that was at the beginning of the pandemic when I think everyone was like, I'm a cook at home.
Right, exactly.
It lasted for like a month, and I was like, all right, Uber Eats is open again. All right, let's get some Uber Eats, DoorDash and stuff.
Yeah.
Going on. So no, I wish I did.
Yeah,
and I have to make it a point to like at least learn some of her recipes.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
I was talking to Aziz the other day, name drop, but you know, he sent me like a cookbook and he's like, man, you really cooking Indian food? He's like, yeah, man, it's great. I'm like, I gotta step my game up.
Yeah.
And especially if my mom is so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a goal of mine and a dream of mine to like learn how to cook at least some of her staple dishes.
Definitely.
You know, I gotta do that.
You have to, or get her to write stuff down if you can, or like write it.
I videotaped it all.
Yeah, that's smart.
I'm like, all right, what do I do
here? That's better.
You know, like, okay, this is what because three fingers in pressure cooker will never translate 10 years from now. But if I have a picture of it, oh, okay.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, my mom put all of her Italian cooking, all of her recipes, she wrote them out for us and gave them to all the kids for Christmas.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's so funny to read because it's like, there's no measurements. Yeah.
Take three handfuls of my hand full of rice. And,
all right. Yeah, throw in some oregano and some pork. How much pork?
Enough pork.
Right. What's a really good, and this comes from really not knowing, I guess other than baklava, what's a good dessert?
Baklava dessert? Is Mediterranean.
Yeah.
It's Greek, I think.
But there's a similar variation of that, right?
I don't know what it's called, but my favorite, well, I have like two favorite Indian desserts. One is gulab jamun, which is like a fried ball of sugar.
Oh yeah.
and some kind of dough. It's like a fried dough. It's a donut soaked in syrup.
Oh.
And it's just
insane.
It's definitely just diabetes, you know. It's it's so bad for you because it's like it's in syrup. It's not in syrup.
And it's like warm or cold. It could have been done.
Yeah.
and then you dipped it in syrup.
Yeah, it was syrup. I love that, but it's so gluttonous.
Yeah.
And then there's pista kulfi ice cream, which is just pistachio ice cream.
Ooh,
but maybe with saffron in it, I think. And growing up, I would just devour that. That was, I could still do that. Like, I love pistachio ice cream.
Yeah, pistachio is good.
It's incredible.
It is incredible.
And then mango russ is like a mango puree, which is, it's also a dessert, but it's obviously a bit lighter.
Right.
But yeah, I've stopped eating Indian desserts or desserts in general.
You have?
Just like, well, I try to avoid them.
Sugar?
Kind of avoid sugar, my dad has diabetes, and it's just like...
Right.
And like, Indian... I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday. What's today? Tuesday? Sunday night. Mm-hmm. We went to dinner, and he was telling me how his dad had a quadruple bypass. Vegetarian his whole life. You know, maybe has one beer a year.
Really?
67 years old.
Whoa.
Felt something was a little off, or it was doing a physical stress test, and the stress test was like, we got to stop. You got to go to the hospital.
Whoa.
And they're like, oh, you have like a crazy blockage in four of your arteries. You got to get open heart surgery like right now.
Jeez.
And it's like that story is not, I guarantee you, is not uncommon amongst Indian Americans of my age and older. It's like South Asians have a high incidence of genetically, yes. I think my friend said that doctor told him like Indian people just tend to have smaller arteries.
Oh.
But it's also we eat thinking we're eating healthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's we're eating vegetables. We're vegetarian.
Vegetarian.
Mind you, it's oil, it's syrup.
Yeah.
And it's fried. And
it is heavy. It is. Yeah.
And it can get bad for you. I'm not knocking Indian food because a lot of foods are like that deceptively. But
yeah.
I think inherently in Indian people, there's this thing of like, oh, if we're eating vegetarian, it's fine. Like oil is not a bad thing
because
we all grow up eating oil and drink and eating like in everything we do.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, you're having it for breakfast because you're eating like this fried dish, fried spicy dish for breakfast.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, that you can't be doing that.
Right.
It's your whole life.
Yeah.
So when there's something to chop out of my life, and I've cut a lot of food out, but like, sweets are like one of them.
That's a big one.
You know, it's like I don't need it. Like I feel amped up on it. I break out when I have a lot of sugar. Like this is bad.
Yeah, whenever my wife loves it, like she doesn't feel like a meal is done until dessert.
Yeah,
you know.
Same.
So we'll be at have this go out for like Italian big meal or whatever.
What's your favorite Italian spot here?
There's a place in the valley called Panzanella's.
Panzanella's.
Okay. Yeah, which is it's just like a family run. You know, like local place,
uh-huh.
But really on point.
North Italian or
no, more Southern, more Southern
pizza,
but not like, but not like really like drenched in stuff. It's probably a little more Roman than like really like the Jersey Italian.
Got it. You know? Okay,
yeah.
Good, good,
yeah.
Good. You're saying your wife added,
but she, if you don't have dessert at the end, and I'm like, I'm bored. I'm like, I'll do it too. But I feel so great when it's over. We've had wine, we've had whatever, and we had the big meal. I'm
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
I have that dessert. I'm wrecked.
Yeah.
It's and you're just wrecked.
It just brings, I think both physically and mentally, you feel like, why did I do that?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I didn't need it. I could have just had a bite, but I had seven. You know, like, it, know. It, like, well, you're going to have a half. I got to finish.
Yeah. And the impact of it is so dense. I mean, it's so powerful. Yeah. Like two bites even, and you're like, that's potent.
You can feel it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes away, but that's what it's supposed to do. But it's also just like, man, I regret it all the time.
I know. Yeah.
I haven't found a good Indian restaurant in LA. Have you?
No, there's not. No.
Which is sad because there's a lot of Indian people here.
I know. And it maybe it's just my just being lazy and going by Postmates of what's in my area. There's this place, Bollywood, that is Bollywood 1 and 2, and they're really fast, and it's like fresh, it's like good fresh stuff, but it's not like what I've had like in New York or Montreal.
Montreal Indian food is, Canadian Indian food is delicious.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I walked into a place once at the festival, and I just, it was, timing was off, I didn't want to meet anybody, I just went into this. It was in the old part of Montreal, and it was really elegant Indian place. And I just sat by myself, and I canceled my spot. I did, because I was like, this is insane. Yeah. I've never had it like this before. It wasn't just like cranking it out. It was like, I was just, I'm just going to milk this.
Oh,
and
I'm glad.
I just
I'm
stayed by,
you.
Oh my God, it was so good.
Canadian Indian food is annoyingly better than anything I've had.
Why is that? Did more settle up there?
I think, you know, I've been debating this for like a few months now, ever since the cancer stuff, because there's three Indian restaurants that I've opened in by the same restaurant group and chef owner partner group in New York in the last year or two. Damaka, Sema, and most recently Masala Wala, which like Masala Wala used to be this old Indian spot in the Lower East Side, and then they lost the lease or whatever it was, and they moved to Park Slope in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
But that Damaka is my favorite Indian restaurant on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
And the food there was just so fucking good.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know why. You know, like I live in Brooklyn.
Right.
And I order Indian food, and it comes, and it's just like watery, watered down chicken, butter chicken. I'm like, they've given up, because right. the palate that's not Indian is like,
right.
think that this is what it is.
This is Indian food, yeah.
It's not that,
right?
It's not what it's like. It's supposed to be rich and flavorful,
yeah.
And like butter chicken
not
is
smothered,
not, yeah. Like it's not supposed to be watered down tomato soup, you know,
right.
it's supposed to have a lot of flavor to it. And like I asked the chef, I was like, what is this? And he's just like, it's just the palates that people are used to it.
Right.
So there's no need to make good Indian food, but like, you know, you go,
yeah.
I haven't gone to Jackson Heights yet. So please excuse me if Jackson Heights has some bomb ass Indian food.
Yeah.
But in like Brooklyn outside of Masala Wala, like it's very hard to find good Indian food.
Well, it's kind of like, it's with every culture, right? I mean, Chinese, I'm sure the same thing.
Yeah.
Italian, you know, there's like, you know, people get used to just slopping on this stuff, and that palate just becomes like, oh, that's what, you know, or Chinese orange chicken is, or, you know, and they do get used to it. They
and
don't
sad.
Know. It, yeah. Yeah.
The best Italian spot I've had in New York. If you've ever been, when you go back,
yeah.
Go to Terre in Park Slope.
Oh yeah,
it's on Fifth Avenue and like Fifth Street in Park Slope. It's Northern Terry. Italian food.
Yeah,
and their cacio pepe is delicious.
Yeah,
and I don't eat the boar ragu, but my wife loves it.
Oh yeah,
and I went to Italy on honeymoon in September.
Oh nice,
and
just this September,
this past September.
Ah, yeah, congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. And That's why I was excited to talk about food, because I think about food constantly. When we went to Italy and we had, you know, their versions of cacio e pepe and boar ragu, whatever.
Like, yeah.
Oh, the guy in Brooklyn is doing it just right. Like, right. It's as close to that as you're going to, as we're going to get. Like, we went to the best spots in Italy, and this guy was
Where were you?
We did. What we landed cities? In Florence.
Uh-huh.
We spent a few days in Florence.
Amazing.
Florence had like some of my favorite food. We went to, I forget the name of the restaurant, and my wife will kill me for forgetting it, but we went to one spot that had this thing called like the John Travolta pasta.
Uh-huh.
I guess like he had made it famous or posted about it or something.
Right, that sounds familiar.
And it was like almost a rigatoni noodle, but not like maybe a bigger one.
Yeah.
It was like this vodka / truffle sauce.
Oh,
it was tomato / tomato sauce. It was incredible.
Oh my God.
They give you 6 pieces and it's just like, this is the best pasta I've ever. We went twice. Yeah. And the second night we went, it was because we tried to get reservations at this one spot, try to walk into one spot that had like this cool view of the river and what have you in Florence. Couldn't get in. They recommended this other spot. I wish I could remember the name. It's just a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And we get there and it's bustling. It's like people are pouring out of the street. Like everyone's just waiting to get their table. And we're like, oh, we got to go here.
Yeah.
They didn't have a table until 9:30. So we went to the Travolta pasta spot first and waited, ate that, and then went back to this other spot.
Oh, really? In one night?
Yeah. We did a bang bang as Bobby and Lou, we would call it. Yeah. And
wow, that's amazing.
They had a duck ragu.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they had this fried chicken. I was like, fried chicken. I gotta eat it. What is it?
Yeah. What are you doing to fried chicken?
What are you doing to fried chicken? And they give you like it's a like tiny little nuggets chopped up, just lightly fried.
Yeah.
With like salt and pepper and chicken breast, and it's like perfectly cooked.
Oh my God.
And you just. I'm like, give me all of the chickens you have. This is the best thing I'll never forget that. Like, if I go back to that, I'm going to have to go find that restaurant again.
Yeah.
It was by the Gucci store. That's what I remember. but, I mean, just mind-blowingly good.
God. That's amazing. I mean, because this is like the antithesis of what you're saying of like ordering that takeout.
Yeah.
Like, that takeout, you don't even care. It's just like, there's nothing that happens to you beyond just putting food in your stomach and digesting it.
Yeah.
Right?
This was an experience.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was just such a revelation. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
This is what food's supposed to be. it's so good.
Yeah.
I never felt like ass afterwards. I was like walking around. We had like, you know, gelato and it was like, oh, this is perfect.
Perfect.
I never felt any bad way about it. Even eating gelato, like it didn't feel like I was getting a sugar rush.
No, right, exactly.
It felt like it's light, balance, airy. And then we went from there, we went to Tuscany. We did like a resort in Tuscany.
Ooh, nice.
Castelfalfi. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but it's like an hour and 20 outside of Florence.
Yeah.
But it's like in the hills, secluded.
Beautiful.
Everything's kind of like in-house. They have like a few restaurants that are like a bit of a walk away. Food there was incredible. We went to Cinque Terre. You're from Italy, or you're Italian?
Italian,
yes. So you've been to Cinque Terre?
I haven't been there. My one grandmother was from there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a crazy place to be from.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
It was beautiful. But that we...
Did you walk it?
We did. No, we took a boat.
You took a boat?
We took a boat, which was awesome. But, excuse me,
How long was this trip?
2 weeks.
Ooh, perfect.
Yeah, we did 2 weeks in Italy, and then I had... My friend's bachelor party was like the weekend after we were supposed to come back. And so I was like, I'm not going to fly back to America and go back to his bachelor party in Barcelona. So I was like, all right, well, let's see if I can't line up shows in London, which is a whole nother story.
Yeah.
So I lined up shows in London. And so we spent like 4 days in London where the best Indian food on the planet exists, probably outside of India.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
Really?
Oh, my God. Like, so good. Compared to if I'm going to compare the Maka versus the restaurant I had called Gymkhana in London, like they're like that. Like,
yeah.
Like they're amazing.
There's got to be places in LA, right?
I put a feeler out like last time I was here. I was like, what's the best Indian restaurant? I got like 2 responses, but this was months ago. I don't remember what they were. I couldn't make it to go. But next time I'm here, I'm definitely gonna make it.
This is making me want to research.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in Florence, when we were in Florence, I think the third day or second day, I was like, I need Indian food. Like, yeah. And what's crazy?
Yeah, this is great. But
what's crazy is that so all the like a lot of the staff like at these restaurants is Indian,
right?
And I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah,
I did a little research. Turns out in the 90s there was like a they needed labor to work on farms,
oh.
In like the cheese farms and the milk farms, all this. And there was a dearth in Italy. Like a lot of Italians didn't want to do that.
Right.
Turns out northern India, Punjabi people are farmers and adept at that. They had some kind of exchange. Mad Indian people came over. There's like generations of Indian people there.
Right.
And so I was like, if there's this many Indian people here, there's got to be a good Indian restaurant. Like
right.
Someone is serving.
Someone's doing something. Yeah.
And so we found the one good Indian restaurant and it was good. I'm not saying it was mind blowing, but
yeah.
For what I wanted to have happen, it
solid.
Achieved that mission.
Yeah.
And those other Indian people in there, I'm like, okay, cool. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so that was Florence. And then we went to Tuscany and Tuscany, like the, oh, Cinque Terre is what I was talking
in
about.
Cinque Terre. Right.
Cinque Terre had like, the best pesto pasta and the best sea bass I've ever had.
I was gonna say seafood. Yeah,
yeah. The sea bass was like they. I was like, let's get the salted sea bass, and I thought they it was just a fillet, and they bring out this brick. It's like this thick of salt.
Oh,
on
wow.
A fish, and I'm like, where's the fish? And they take the salt off, and then they fillet the fish for you, and it's just butter, just melts.
My God.
Was incredible,
amazing.
And I think Cinque Terre is known for like pine nut pesto. Pasta,
right?
And my wife said that was her fate. That's the best pesto she's ever had.
Really?
And I was like, okay, then it's got to be good.
Oh man!
And then Tuscany was
so
great.
Good.
That was incredible.
God, that place, yeah, just insane.
You've been to Italy, imagine
yeah,
a few times.
Yeah, it's just insane.
I love it.
Yeah,
The food was great. The trip itself was amazing. Tuscany was very cool. It was just more like relaxing. Like the food was incredible.
Yeah,
we ate at some like gastronomy, like, you know, they do like fancy stuff with food.
Yeah.
I forget what the term is.
Yeah.
And that was great. The views were amazing. From there, we went to Rome. Rome was...
That's my favorite.
We were only there for a day and a half.
Uh-huh.
2 days, maybe. 2 days total, but like half a day, full day, half a day. And there we went to... Aziz recommended we go to Roscioli.
Uh-huh.
And so we're like, all right, we got to do all the Vatican. We got to see the Vatican. We got to see St. Peter's Cathedral. We got to see the Colosseum. How the hell are we going to get to Roscioli? And we couldn't get a reservation. We had Matteo Lane call from the States to try to get us a reservation in Italian. And they're like, no, we don't have it.
Oh, that's
like,
terrible. Yeah. If
on,
he
Mateo.
Can't do it, yeah.
And don't they know you're famous?
Yeah.
And so we went. And so we got done with the Vatican and St. Peter's at like, I will say like 11:30.
Yeah.
Because we went at 7:30 and St. Peter's Cathedral is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Like,
yeah.
It's insane. Like Vatican is cool.
Yeah.
You know, the cool chapel, all that. But
yeah,
the St. Peter's Cathedral just blows your mind.
Yeah.
Like that's a church. They built that in 1600.
Insane.
Like how is that?
Yeah.
And then we were like, let's just try Roscioli. Like maybe we can walk in.
Yeah.
And we get there at 12 thinking it opens at 12. And it opens at 12:30, so we're like, oh, okay, cool. We put our names down at the top of the list. We go back at 12:30, and we got a table.
Ooh, nice.
Like, right by, I'm not, have you been?
No.
It's like a deli counter, and then like a little walkway, and then in the back is where there's majority of the seating, but there's some seating in the hallway in front of the deli counter. They put us right in front of the deli counter, which is kind of cool.
It is cool.
Italians coming in, like, ordering their groceries or their deli meats. Hey, give me a pound. We know, in their Italian, actually.
Yeah.
And so I have this tendency to just like buy out the menu. Like I'm getting everything.
Yeah. Right. We're not going to be here again for a while.
Yeah. We're getting, this table will be full.
Yeah.
And the waiters are looking at us like, you sure? Like, why would I lie? Give me the food.
Let's go.
Yeah. And so we had, I know, salmon, both pastas that they recommended. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm so glad Aziz recommended it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So bomb.
Oh my God.
And it like kind of worked out luckily that we were able to go.
Yeah.
Then we went to, from there, we went to Positano.
Oh yeah.
And man, I just love Positano. Like,
yeah.
I thought I was going to be like, shit, we got to walk all the time. All these hills are stupid. And I was just telling myself, don't complain. This is the honeymoon. Like, have a good time. And like, I didn't even have to do that.
Yeah.
I was like, this is cool. Like,
just happens.
Yeah. And we went, we got the second to last day, we kind of screwed up in the sense that we didn't book a a boat ride to Capri like before we left.
Right.
And so when we got to Positano, we're like, all right, well, we got to get the hotel to get us a boat. And they only had like a mega yacht or like a 50 footer. Right. We're like, all right. Shit. We don't got no friends. It's going to be us two people on 50 footer. All right, let's embrace it.
Call Aziz again.
Yeah, yeah. We get on this yacht, and Aziz had recommended Scoglio, which is a restaurant in, I forget, Sorrento maybe? Or on the water. But again, one of these impossible to get reservations at. We asked the captain, like, hey, are you able to maybe get us a reservation? He calls them. He's like, 1:30. Okay. Two people. Yeah.
Nice. So we
go to Capri, get like Capri's best gelato, walk up this mountain to get gelato. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Come back, get on the boat. It's raining. We're like, shit, it's going to rain. Now we go. 1:15 approaches. We pull up to the, it's literally put like, bring the yacht to the dock.
Yeah.
We walk up the steps into the restaurant.
Whoa.
And they had the best,
really,
the most incredible spaghetti.
It's like a dream trip.
Yeah. Spaghetti, zucchini spaghetti. Like, that's what they're famous for.
Yeah.
And it was so just creamy, just mind blowingly good.
Insane.
Yeah. It was. And then
it's so insane.
And then we just chilled the rest of the trip, like another day, just chilling at the beach, just ordering like, you know, regular food and hanging out. But it was,
this is hard to come back and go on tour.
Yeah.
Really. I'm just thinking about like, sitting in the back of Cobb's this weekend, like, yeah, I guess I'll get chicken fingers.
Yeah, right. And I mean, San Francisco, I think, had at one point, I mean, I went like 5 years ago, the first time. When was Hassan's wedding? 2015, 2016 or something, that's when I went. And I had some recommendations, and if I recommend, I'm not sure if it still exists, but Davola, I'll look it up and send it to you.
Okay, yeah.
But in, like, the best, just very simple spaghetti.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need it.
Yeah.
And you're Italian, so I'm sure you have like your recipes and stuff, but I was just like,
that basic.
Yeah. Just the most simple, like red, little basil leaf. That's all I want.
Right.
Rolled
exactly.
up, easy to eat. It's incredible.
Done. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to go from Florence to like regular food, but then we went to London.
Right.
And the funny thing about London is that September 8th, we're on honeymoon. We get noticed the Queen's dead.
Oh, God.
I got to go do shows on September 19th.
Oh, no.
The day of her funeral. I'm the only show. I'm the only comedy show happening in London.
Oh, no.
Literally the only show.
Yeah.
In London on September 19th. And I'm like, is this going to get canceled? Like, no, show's going on. I'm like, awesome.
Did they come out?
400 sold out. 400
Whoa.
People, like, just like, fantastic room.
Wow.
Comedy Store, shout out to RK Events for putting it on.
That's
like,
amazing.
It was my, like, I was like the day before when we're flying to London, I'm like,
yeah, how's this gonna go?
Yeah, I gotta write 20 minutes of London jokes. I gotta write 20 minutes of Queen jokes.
Yeah,
that's
much,
what they're gonna want.
How much Queen can I talk?
And I did 20 minutes on the Queen.
You did.
It was so much fun. Like,
and
some of it was good, some of it was bad, but it was like, I wrote this on the plane here, like, relax, guys.
What was your take that
I mean, I'm an Indian person, and I was quite happy that she was gone.
Right.
I don't like to be like, oh, she, fuck her, she's dead. But part of it is like, I don't like the revelry around celebrating someone.
Monarchy, colonial.
Yeah. Part of that's like, you know, like, that seems weird to celebrate.
Yeah.
I got into it a little bit with some, you know, lady in the crowd.
Oh, really?
Indian lady in the crowd.
Indian lady.
Loves the Queen.
Wow.
And,
interesting.
It was fun. We went tit for tat, but, you know, I had the mic, so it was fun. But it was just like, kind of like a surreal thing that I got to do that.
Yeah.
Like, literally the only show.
Right.
Book of Mormon was around the corner, canceled. Cancel their show.
That's crazy.
You know, and I was like, yeah, the government
said. You were
said,
just disrespectful enough.
Yes. The government said I could go on, and here I am just talking shit about the body still warm.
So are people, what do you want people to do now? You want them to come out and see your tour right
Please,
now?
Please come out and see my tour. Thank you, China. It's great. It's a great special.
Yeah,
you
it's
can
a
watch
great special.
English. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But come see me on tour, Lucky Lefty Tour. You can find tickets at findingnimesh.com.
Awesome.
Please come see me.
So cool. Thanks for the time. Yeah, this was really great.
Thank you very much, man. Yeah. I could talk forever about food.
Yeah, we'll have to go out when I come to New York. We should go have a meal.
Please, yeah. Text me. Take my number and we'll go out. I'll take you to an Indian spot.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
I'm in with the chef now. I'm like, anytime I got a famous friend to bring, he's like, bring him over. Let's go.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I brought Che there. And so Che was the one who told me to go to Gymkhana. A few other people told me to go to Gymkhana. When I was in Durham, North Carolina, this Indian chef, restaurant owner came to my show and they waited until after to meet me and stuff. Yeah. And they're like, come to our restaurant. I'm like, nah, I don't hang with strangers, but I do want Indian food.
I'll do it.
Yeah, so we went to the restaurant. I was like, this is delicious. And he's like, yeah, we're from London, but you know, we've lived here for 20, 30 years or whatever. Wow. And when I was going to London, I'd message him like, yo, what's good Indian food to eat? And he gave me Gymkhana and a few other restaurants.
Yeah.
And then when I was in Italy, I got a FaceTime from Mike Che, and he's like, bruh, I'm in London. Like, this Indian food is great. You guys are good. I'm like, and if you know Mike, like I know Mike, like one of my best friends.
Yeah.
He would talk so much shit about Indian food. And so for him to be like, this is delicious, you gotta get it. I'm like, that's crazy. That's overcame that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so I brought him to Dhamaka too. And he's like, it's good. Like, it's just as good.
Now he's converted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll bring him to Dhamaka or Semo.
All right, that's great.
It's incredible.
All right, I'll take you up on it for sure.
Please.
And let me know how you like the bread.
I will. I'll give some to Bert. We'll eat it together. I can't wait.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
We got it, Aaron. All right, kids, there you have it. The great Nimesh Patel. Go check out a special Thank You China. It is streaming on YouTube right now. And sign up or just follow him on TikTok and all social media. Very funny. And go see him live. He really is a thoughtful, fun comic. Once again, go to TomPapa.com. Look up all of my dates. I am raging to the end of the year. Then we're just announced this week a whole bunch of new shows for the new year. Oh, it's tiring to even think I'm promoting next year. But we have so many great shows in D.C. and Atlanta and a whole bunch of places. I'm not even going to list them right now. But go to TomPapa.com. They all just went on sale this week. Check them out. I'll see you out there. I'll see you next week. And enjoy.